Okay, let's start. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next webinar of the organized by the Dutch chapter, this time in cooperation with Ernst & Young. Title, Accelerate to Get Ahead of the Changing Consumer. Thank you very much for joining, as I said. I hope everybody is safe and healthy. Before we join and before we start up with and hand over to Ernst & Young, I would like to give a brief update of where we are these days with the Dutch chapter. A few of the key characteristics, which is on the next slide. So my name is Valerie. Together with Petra of Ernst & Young, I co-lead the Dutch chapter of LEAD. We're a team of about 12 people organizing these kind of webinars and other activities, unfortunately in a virtual world, but normally, of course, with as many face-to-face events as we can. Quick update, we are growing heavily, as you can see. We're almost doubled in, or more than doubled in the last 2 years. Very much representations of a lot of big companies in the Netherlands, but also with quite a lot of individual members that have joined the network. We really hope to continue to grow in the next months, and especially also with profiles from a broader, let's say, representation of companies, also from retail, for example, but also trying to make sure we have as much as a diverse membership spectrum as we can, with people from very different backgrounds and cultural backgrounds and company backgrounds, etc. So what we're trying to do is very much organizing interactive and energetic webinars. You will have seen, or you might have joined, some of the happy hours in the last months, but also some of the webinars that we've organized over the last year. Quick heads up on what's coming up next. There will be another webinar on the 21st of May. Please keep an eye on the emails that you get with this announcement. And there will also be another happy hour coming up in the weeks after. So please keep an eye on open communications that you get from us. Before I hand over to Van to kind of call it a logistical heads ups for everybody to be aware of, on the next slide, please make sure you mute yourself as you would do with some of the other meetings that you have. For any questions and answer, there will be time at the end of the meeting, but you can use the Q&A button, which you see at the bottom of your screen. And the session will be recorded, so you can also have another look or re-listen to some of the items later in the coming days and weeks. Second logistical comment before we start, with regards to the next slide, which is the antitrust guidelines. As you might be aware, there's participations, just as the members of the panel also today, of different companies that sometimes also compete with each other. Please make sure that with any of the questions or comments that you make, that you keep this in mind and be aware of any of these, let's say, cautions that we need to apply during the webinar. So without further much ado, I hand over to Van for the introduction of the topic of today, Accelerate to Get Ahead of the Changing Consumer. Van, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Valerie. So my name is Van Nguyen. I am in the I'm in EY as a manager for the business development team, serving mostly consumer goods and retail clients. And next to that, I've also been a volunteer of the LEAD network for the last 7 years. And more recently, I'm the chair of the marketing committee. So very excited to be here with you today. Before I hand over to my colleague Sasha, who will tell you a little bit more about this topic, I just wanted to give you a bit of background about why we're presenting this. So 3 years ago, EY embarked on a journey with a program called Future Consumer Now. We wanted to create something to help our clients think about the future differently. So what could happen in the future, what type of opportunities they would have, and what would that mean for their business? We saw that the consumer is changing at an incredible speed. And I think you, the audience who is probably, you are probably working in one of these companies, you can recognize that the market is changing exponentially fast. I think one of the biggest disruption in consumer products, if you ask people about it, they will probably say it was Amazon. But when you look at it, Jeff Bezos got the prize or got named a Time Magazine's Man of the Year back in 1999, which a lot of people don't know. So actually, Amazon has been changing the market for a long time, and we only now have been discussing the incredible speed at which it is changing and the e-commerce that's happening in the world. So the Future Consumer Now program, we started a couple years back with over 200 futurists, clients, also non-clients, but and companies from different sectors to really look at how the future is impacted. We shaped this around something we called drivers of change, of which we identified 150 in a series of hackathons in LA, in Berlin, in London, Mumbai, and Los Angeles. So from these sessions, we created 15 potential worlds. So worlds that don't exist today, but could be existing in the future, as well as 30 personas around it. We really looked at how the consumer will behave, how they will shop, how they will eat, how will they live, how will they move. And yeah, some of the things we found in these drivers of change was really things that you would expect, like the importance of cybersecurity, 3D printing, but also other factors like the rise of personal concierge in your lives based on artificial intelligence. So things that we couldn't imagine 3 years ago, but we see that have now accelerated also due to the pandemic. So what's really interesting is that things that we came up with 3 years ago were not really that realistic, but we can see that acceleration, that exponential change coming very fast in these past months, I would even say. So with that, I'd like to introduce my colleague Sasha, who will take you further into this topic.
Yes, thank you, Van. Hi, everyone. My name is Sasha. I'm a colleague of Van, working for EY, but actually in a subsidiary of EY, which is called VODW. We are specialized in customer experience, digital transformation, and consumer-centric innovation. And today we're going to talk, of course, like every self-respecting newspaper or talk show, we're going to talk about COVID. And fortunately, the good thing that the end of this pandemic is almost there, hopefully, so then we can start talking about other topics as well. But with this approaching the end, we all might have the tendency to lean a little bit backwards, to get through our breaths, to be grateful that it's over. And we might expect, or we might hope, that consumer behavior will get back to normal. Motivations and drivers of consumers will get back to as they were before. And we probably all look forward to sail into somewhat calmer waters. But I hate to disappoint you, especially this early in the session, but a recent study, which we held in February of this year, showed that consumers compared to October of last year are not getting less, as you might expect, but more worried about things like their finances, their health, the safety of their families. And the respondents of our study said that they expect that their choices will be different in the next 3 years, and that some of their newly formed COVID behaviors are here to stay. So instead of leaning back, we believe that it's more important than ever to accelerate your transformation and to embrace innovation to get ahead of this changing consumer. So what I want to do today, I want to take you through a few of the main learnings of our study, which is called the Future Consumer Index. It's a recurring study that which we started during the first lockdown around April 2020. And in February, we had our sixth edition. And the study, which is actually a survey, is conducted in 20 countries. And we survey around 15,000 respondents at a time. So I will share a few of the findings. I made a selection of some interesting findings. And I also show a few examples of companies that deal really well with this changing behavior. So of course it doesn't, you don't need to do research to know that COVID changed our behavior and that it's changing companies. So for instance, I'm always curious who of us joining this meeting looks a bit like this. Because working from home made us care less about our physical appearances and more about comfort. So a lot of us are wearing what we call at-leisure clothing during working from home. So jogging pants or pajamas, as you see here on the screen, or yoga pants. So we saw a rise in at-leisure clothing at the expense of jeans. So we saw a major decline in the amount of jeans that were sold. Another thing that is quite obvious is, of course, is for instance, the sale of mountain bikes that went through the roof, and Strava, which is an app where you can register all your rides and you can compare your rides with others, reported about 2 million new subscribers per month in 2020. And that makes total sense, right? Because during COVID, we spent more time on our health. We want to become healthier. And cycling is a healthy activity, but it's also really lockdown proof as it is outdoor and you can do it by yourself. You don't need a group of people for that. Another example, which doesn't need you to do research to know that consumer behavior is changing, the sale of baking mixes rose with 160%. So probably having time on our hands and being stuck at home all inspired us to do this mindful and more patient activity where we normally don't have time for or take the time for. So in the beginning of the first lockdown, all the baking flours were sold out, at least in the Netherlands. And one last example is, of course, the digital entertainment flourished. Since we couldn't go to theaters or concerts anymore, we all watched television or movies from home. And for instance, that led to a major success for Disney Plus that managed to achieve an amount of subscribers that took Netflix 7 years to achieve. So what I wanted to say with this example is that you don't need to do research to know that COVID changed our behaviors. It made us more mindful about our spending. It reduced our shopping frequency. Our physical appearances became less important. We built entire lifestyles around our home, right? Home was our homeschooling environment. It was our working place. It was our coffee shop. It was the place where we entertain ourselves, where we entertain our guests. It was our gym. It also makes total sense that the rise of digital entertainment was there, that we focus more on our health, that healthy alternatives became more important. And of course, we all know that online shopping went through the roof across all categories and across all ages. But what is interesting is which of these behaviors are there to stick. So a lot of the changes that you could see on the previous screen were accelerations of things that we already wanted to change. So a lot of the respondents of our study said that COVID forced them to make changes that they wanted to make for a longer time. For instance, being more healthy or spending more time with family. But whether people will stick to all these changes when everything is back to normal depends on how satisfied they are with the alternative. So although we were often forced to change our habits, sometimes even against our wills, doing this new way often made us experience that there were some benefits as well. So for instance, an example is going to the gym. We can't wait to go back to the gym. But on the other side, we also experience the benefits of working out from home, because you can do it in your own time. You have a wider access to online lessons, and you don't have to commute time. So whether people will stick to certain behaviors or in a kind of a manner will depend on how satisfied they are with the alternative. And we did some research to that. So we ask our respondents, for instance, what they expect that their main purchase driver will be in the next 3 years from now. And 32% said that price will be their most important criteria when buying a product. And even a larger group of people, 68%, plans to be more aware and cautious of their spending in the long term. And they expect to turn, for instance, towards white label products or cheaper alternatives. And it's, of course, driven by the fact that they either lost their jobs or they saw their income decrease or they don't have they are pessimistic about the economic recovery, for instance, so it makes sense. But it's important to realize that price or affordability is the number one thing that drives consumers in the next 3 years from now, and that it's the most important criteria in their decision-making process. So that means that companies need to think about the build-up of their product portfolio, but they need to think about their pricing, they need to think about their costs, they need to think about the value that they bring against to the alternatives in the market. And one company that deals really well with this is IKEA. And of course, IKEA is already famous for its affordable furniture, or at least it's affordable in the Western part of the world. But they also started this initiative that takes back your old furniture in exchange for a refund. So it makes it more affordable to buy new furniture. And actually, this was started as a counter initiative against Black Friday. But it's now a permanent service that they offer. So the second place for the most important purchase criteria for the next 3 years is for health. So 25% of the consumers say that what is good for me will drive their purchase decisions. And an even larger share, more than half of the consumers, say that they want to make healthier choices in their product purchases in the longer term. But interesting there is, as a sidestep in our research, is that 62% of the consumers say they would share personal data for healthier product recommendations. So there is a really interesting opportunity for companies there. And an example here is, for instance, Thrive. Thrive makes probiotic products. You can't buy them in the drugstore or in the supermarket because they are completely tailor-made to each consumer. So how it works, a consumer receives a test kit, send them back. The test kit is analyzed, your bacteria is analyzed, and then a Thrive comes up with a customized probiotic supplement. But they also provide the consumer with some personalized food recommendations through an app. Kind of similar but different is DNA Nudge. And DNA Nudge works a little bit the same. So you get a test kit at home. You need to hand in some saliva. They analyze your DNA. And your DNA data is getting stored on a bracelet, as you can see on this slide. You receive the bracelet, and with this bracelet, you can start shopping in their stores, and you can scan all the products in their stores with this bracelet. And the bracelet lights up green when the product matches your DNA, or red when it's not matching your DNA or it's not good for your DNA. Then the third and fourth place in what is the most important purchase category is sustainability and social impact. We see that those two are becoming increasingly important. And we saw this trend emerging during COVID, where consumers said that they valued that companies take a role in fighting the crisis. And we see that a lot of people expect to continue to value the impact on planet and society, and use that as an important criteria to evaluate all the options. So 70% say that sustainability and 14% say that social impact will be the most important purchase criteria in the next 3 years from now. And even a larger percentage, 69% of the consumers say that brands must positively change the world. However, and that is then linked to the first purchase criteria, there is only a really small group that is willing to pay for this. So they all want it, so they all believe that a positive impact on planet and society is important. But they see it more as something that is a basic ingredient and not something that they want to pay for. And an example of a company that taps into not only actually to the last purchase criteria, but to all of them is CocoKind. CocoKind creates beauty care products with ingredients that are and healthy for you and don't do any harm to the planet. But they are also affordable, so you can buy them at Target. Another example that taps into the sustainability thing is that De Bijenkorf just announced the launch of their Green Studio, which is a place in their physical and in their digital stores, which is entirely built around sustainable brands. And even more, they announced that in 2025, they want their entire assortment to be sustainable. And they also want to reduce their own footprint with 30%. So there's quite some high ambitions here. Next example, it's actually a Dutch pride. It's called Renoon. It's a website that allows shoppers to search for sustainable fashion. And it provides a range of filters, like whether it's ethically produced, the footprint, what materials are used, what the sustainability efforts of a brand are. And a little bit similar to that is Verify, which is a Chrome extension. And it tells you how sustainable the brand is of the website that you visit, but it also provides you with a sustainable alternative next to that. And then the last purchase criteria, 12%, says that experience is the most important criteria for them. But actually, that percentage is a lot bigger under the younger generations, because they say that they want to make up for the time that they lost during the last pandemic year. So under Gen Z, this percentage is a lot bigger. And what is interesting to see is that all these trends towards affordability, towards sustainability, towards the impact on society, towards health, is actually really in line with what we know about Generation Z. The generation is more mindful about spending because they have been raised during two major crises. They are faced with their study debts. They are faced with difficulties buying a house. They are known for valuing things like purpose, sustainability, diversion, equality. And Gen Z is a really important group to keep in mind because they make up 50% of the world population. This percentage is smaller in the Netherlands because we have an aging society, of course, but still they make up around 2.9 million or 3 million of our population. So still a really interesting group. And we see that the trends that are subject to the Gen Z are also applicable now to the older generation post-pandemic. So interesting trends that you should not neglect. And going forward from here, the man that we can really learn from going forward is this man and his van. I'm not sure if you all know who this man is, but it's Jeff Johnson. And Jeff Johnson was the first employee of Blue Ribbon Group. And Blue Ribbon Group is Nike. So it was it started out as Blue Ribbon, but it turned a few later into Nike. And Jeff Johnson actually had a way of doing business that was really successful. And although it was somewhere in the 60s, I think it really taps into what we know about consumers post-pandemic. And I think we can learn a lot from him going forward. So how he worked. So the main task of Jeff Johnson, so he was not the founder of Nike, so there were two founders, but he was the first employee. And his main task was to sell more shoes. So what did he do? He drove to all the track meets to meet his target group where they were. So he drove with his van to the track meets to talk with all the runners that were there, the coaches that were there, and talked about their experiences, their needs, their current issues with their current shoes. He tried to really understand them and their context. And based on that, he constantly tweaked the shoes to make them better and to make them better fitted to the runners that he spoke to. So it was not only about the product feature, but also about the balance between the value of the product, the features, the price. And what I think is really interesting is that he kept cards of all the customers of all the runners actually that he spoke to, with all the details that he knew about these persons. So their shoe size, their shoe preferences, their favorite distances, the date of birth. And he used this information for numerous things. He sent them birthday cards, but he also sent them good luck cards when he knew that a big run was up. But he also sent them training tips. So actually it was the old fashioned way of personalized messaging, or what we nowadays call marketing automation. And last but not least, what really characterized this man is that he was genuinely motivated to create better shoes to help the runners. He really wanted to contribute to their success. So he was really real about it and passionate about his customers and the things that they wanted to achieve. And of course, it's also great that he is part of Nike, because Nike is always very purpose driven. So it really fits the story of this post-pandemic consumer. So I think his way of doing business really represents a relationship that you want to create with your consumers. And nowadays, this is all much easier to do with all the data and technology that is there. So you don't need a van anymore. You don't need to drive across the entire country to meet all your customers physically, but this is something that you can do by making smart use of data and making smart use of all the technology that is out there. So now the end of this pandemic is near. I would say let's embrace the inner Jeff Johnson that we all have in us, embrace all the good opportunities that the new consumer brings to us, and enjoy the relaxation of the restrictions that are hopefully coming our way. And I want to thank you, and I want to hand over to Patrick.
Yes, thank you, Sasha, for this wonderful presentation on everything that we see moving around and changing in consumer behavior. And we're moving towards the panel discussion. As you can see on the slide, I'm leading the EY VDW team, being there at EY for almost 3 years right now. We're the acquisition of VDW in Dutch by EY, activating in terms of digital innovation, marketing, sales, and service. And if you move to the next slide, I'm very honored to introduce you the three panel members we have today. from different backgrounds, valued lead members from marketing, sales, and supply chain perspective. So it's up for a good discussion. And if you have a question to one of the panel members or maybe to Sasha, just share it by the Q&A and we will come back to that later. So Caroline, Filippo, and Valerie, happy to have you here in this panel discussion. And maybe as a first sort of question, I think you all are just like I am myself, a consumer for first and foremost. So maybe as a sort of an opening question, could you share with the audience, please, one of, well, you've heard Sasha talking about us consumers doing different things different in this pandemic times. So maybe it's interesting for us as a starter, what is a strange or maybe surprising change in your own consumer behavior that you came across in the last year? So well, let's start with Caroline, maybe a question for you, something to share as a consumer.
Yeah, sure. No, and I can relate to a lot of the things that Sasha was saying, but to pick one is I was quite a single mind focused person 5 days a week at the office. And then at home, I live my private life. Now, if I look back specifically over 2020, I think for me as a consumer and also as an employee, my whole life became one life suddenly. So there was no change between the working hours, the private life. And that from a consumer point of view changed also everything when it came to my needs and my demands. I suddenly expected that everything was possible at the minute, during the day, et cetera, et cetera. So the postman coming literally at the moment that you order something online, while normally I would do some of my personal stuff over the weekend, I could quickly go to a store if the store was still open to get it fixed. So that extra dimension of I want it now, so I'm going to arrange it now immediately, was for me an extra dimension that happened over 2020, and that my life became suddenly one full life versus more the different lives that I've have been leading in the years before.
Mm-hmm. That's a great experience. Thank you for sharing. Filippo, could you share an experience from your side?
Of course. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, maybe if I have to pick one is the fact that more than before, as a family, we started to shop local, or maybe to help the community in terms of shops more. Because, you know, I'm living in London and there are so many businesses that got very difficult time in terms of small shops, but also bar, cafe, restaurant, etc. And then more than before, we started to, okay, let's really try to shop local. Let's really try to help the small corner shops. Let's maybe pick up the food at the restaurant instead of asking delivery at home because they are making more margin. So this actually is staying with us. It's probably the idea to use the power of the money that we spend by shopping to influence in a positive way the local community where they're living is something I believe that for us will stay.
Thank you for sharing. And Valerie?
Yeah, I can already relate to both of the topics that Caroline and Filippo already shared with one full life, especially indeed, because everything is blurred now. I couldn't have imagined that I was in meetings with people, sometimes even my children popping up behind the screen, because until that time I thought, oh no, that's not professional, but now it's just common life because you know it, that everybody has it. But one thing that on top of the other things that have been mentioned, I think for me personally, is that even though I'm a foodie by background, more and more I really focus on healthy meals, healthy food, healthy living, really making a full meal and a calendar of what we're going to eat on which day to also optimize the shopping for that, only going into a shop once a week. It's very much planning around healthy, let's say, future-minded food and living. That's, I think, something that really has popped up even more in the last year.
Thanks all for sharing. And obviously the question is, do you expect to behave like this while we are just loosening up the restrictions and getting our vaccines, or will this be a change that will be there? Well, maybe not forever, but for longer than just this period in time.
Yeah, I think my, well, I will not stay to exactly the same habits that I have now when we are all working from home all the time, for instance, but for sure the things I appreciate a lot that I've learned over this last year, I will stick to me. So I will not be, when the world opens up, 5 days in the office anymore. The time that I save with not traveling and spending it on some meaningful stuff is there to stay for me. Another one, linking to the sustainability angle that Sasha was referring, my mind is open to the much waste we create at home when all of us are suddenly at home. So the behavior that impacts on what choices I make in the store are there to stay, and I think for many of consumers are. So I think there's stuff to stay for sure and stuff to change also when we gradually hopefully open up soon.
Sure, thank you.
Now, similarly to me, it's gonna be maybe to find a new balance for me. Some of these kind of behavior, the one that I mentioned before, for example, shop more locally, I really believe, at least for me and for my family, and I see my friends will stay. Maybe some of them we are going to be back a little bit to the pre-COVID situation. So the question is that what is going to be the new balance then the consumer will find? It's interesting, and probably the balance will be different country by country. There is a strong for me point which is really be more closer than ever to the local consumer, the local shopper, because the answer to them to, for example, affordability that we mentioned, will be different country by country. So we really have to go, even if you're part of three of us, big organization, multinational, really think local more than ever, I would say.
Yeah, and perhaps one last point. I think the trend towards more sustainability, so everything related to the planet, society, that will really stick. If I only notice what different questions my children are asking me on this topic than last year, not just because they're 1 year older, but it really because it's simply some things that they hear and they see every day. I think that's really something that has now really accelerated also for the future to be embedded in what we do and what we and how we act.
Yes, definitely.
There is a very interesting building, if I may, what Valerie said.
Sure, sure.
Very depending of the category. Yeah? One of the category I'm looking forward with my team is the baby food. The new moms, the new dads, the new parents of the future will be the ones that have got 20, 22, 23 years old today. So their change of behavior will be probably more radical than the 50 years old. So for this category, the change is going to be probably more radical than, I don't know, the water category. Just to mention another one in part of the portfolio.
Yeah, sure. Well, and maybe adding to one of the things you have encountered yourself, Filippo, in terms of local, just moving to, well, you all work for big companies with famous brands, global brands, obviously some local ones as well, but how do you encounter that local challenge that you see yourself, that you have experienced yourself, Filippo, at Danone?
You mean in terms of local versus international kind of offer? Well, no, it's a very important question, and it's not an easy answer, I would say. And even in this case, country by country is quite different, because in some country we had already kind of a strong push on local brands, on local labels, and so COVID has only accelerated this trend. In some other countries, I'm thinking about, for example, I don't know, China is a big market for us. International brands were the gold standard for many, many reasons. And then suddenly now with COVID, things are changed dramatically and local brands and local label become the new gold standard. So again, it's really depend by market and find the right balance between international and local labels by country, by category, it will be absolutely critical to win the consumer mind and art, I think.
Yeah, thank you.
And maybe to build on that, because I think you can have, you have the global brands and many of our companies have, but the impact which you can have with a global brand in a local market can be very local. And thinking of the different marketing campaigns that many brands have launched over 2020 and the relevancy in the local markets that it brought. And I think all of our companies have great examples of that. But I think that was the change of mindset also that luckily the brands took, and to think what can we really bring to the local consumer, even with the power of a global brand. That's, I think, the beauty of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Caroline and Filippo. Maybe just a question for you, Caroline, on well, we've seen, and I think we've all noticed that purpose matters. If you look from a consumer perspective, what are you doing on teams as sustainability or purpose more in general? How do you look at it, and what actually are your brands doing around this?
Yes, for sure. So as Valerie was saying, and as Sasha as well in the presentation, that's a trend to stay. And I think it only accelerated over the last couple of years. And for sure, an important one we're focusing on. And every category on its own relevant way and its own ownable way, because you need to do it with its authentic and true to the brand that you're working on. So to give you an example, some brands were focusing very much on the social impact. So for instance, with our brand Always, we have been launching a campaign called Stop Period Poverty, because there's still also in the Netherlands, girls suffering from the fact that they can't pay their menstrual products. So a campaign has been launched that we have been raising the awareness of that issue, which is a taboo because nobody really likes to talk about menstrual periods and all these kind of stuff. But it's a reason why girls miss out school or not go to their soccer training, etc. And we've donated to the Voedselbank. So that's a very social campaign focus on that category. While on another category, like the laundry business, we know that the temperature that you wash has a huge impact on the footprint of laundry. So hence, starting an educational program to consumers on cold wash is there the priority, which is much more on the sustainable green footprint compass. So we look on category by category, what is the thing that we can own as a brand, which is close to the brand, and we can really help the consumer with by listening to the consumer in that dialogue that Philippe also was mentioning. So I think that's the importance, stay true to that brand, and then focusing on that thing within your category that you can help the consumer with.
Yeah. Well, and do you see that consumers are, do they see that you take this very seriously, and do you have the conversations internally around this, or just to prevent you from blaming some greenwashing or marketing tricks?
No, absolutely no. So therefore, that dialogue is so important. So, and luckily, we have the tools in this digital world, as Sasha was referring to. So you get instant feedback from consumers on Instagram. So you know directly if something is working. And the example of that Always campaign that went completely fast on the socials, and we saw retailers jumping on it. So then you know it's something good. And internally, we're always asking ourselves that question, and more deliberately focusing on it. When we are talking marketing plans in general, not only focusing on innovation with sustainability, but always still ask that question, what is it when a consumer thinks of it from a sustainability angle? So I think it's super important that we keep on stating that questions. We are calling it internally a bit with a joke, the green devil's advocate, so that we are still trying to ask those questions to each other to make sure that we are not going in that tunnel vision. We are all being heroes.
Yeah, okay, that's great. The green devil's advocate, so just keep, we'll keep that in, I think. Valerie, maybe moving to your field of expertise, supply chain. Well, I think we've seen an acceleration over the last months, at least I've seen it in terms of e-commerce, digital sales, and all that comes with it. And we see that the majority of companies is looking at that supply chain as being a very important, maybe the important, well, besides the brands and the marketing and all the stuff, in terms of competitive advantage. But could you share a bit of your challenge in terms of looking back and looking forward from a supply chain perspective?
Yeah. I can. Well, it started already in March last year when everything, let's say, kicked off with regards to COVID, with all the search categories and everything. From one day to the other, we were really at the center of the business with simply keeping the operation alive, with bringing things, even with upswings of up to 25, 30, sometimes even 50% upswing in certain categories. With everybody working from home, but all the people in the factory still going to the factory to literally keep the lines running. So very quickly, everybody was really faced at and looking at supply chain to see, okay, what's happening now there? Usually it's, hey, why don't you deliver? But now it's, hey, great, you can deliver. And, you know, there is really something that is really at the core of the company as a whole. And quite quickly it appeared not only in operations, because that's what happened. And you know, that's usually what supply chain people are good at, to organize and to keep things flowing. But very quickly it also had a health and well-being part. So not only was it really focusing on the health and well-being of the factory workers, of people, literally office people that started to work in factories to help out in case there was a, you know, high increased illness rates or whatever, so that type of health and well-being, but also a lot of activities locally to give products to local hospitals, local caretakers and everything. So that quite quickly also came up. What has kind of developed in is more in the last months an increased need for flexibility, because there will be upswings and downswings far more than we had in the past. So mm-hmm. How can you design your supply chain for flexibility? How can you decrease basically produce every product every week, but then be better at the upswing and the downswing adjustments every week? So that's something that came up already quite quickly in the last year, but now it's really moving and transforming into how can we design the supply chain for the future with all the climate, health, social and inclusivity. Well, let's say all the aspects of the sustainable living strategy that also Unilever has as a company, it's coming back into the supply chain. So it's very much how can we optimize and work together to make every single aspect of that alive, far more than in the past where it was really a pillar. So mm-hmm. it's really accelerated and really, well, as you say, bringing the supply chain really to the core of the operation and of the business.
Well, that's great. I can imagine that's a great challenge for you as well on a personal level as well.
So. Yeah, we've had our challenges. Looking back, it's better, huh? It's easier.
Well, we could do this session over in a year as well. So again, but maybe just moving Filippo to you and talking about the sales perspective. I can imagine that you it was challenging times for you as well. But if you look at changing consumer behaviors, do you work together with some of your clients in terms of some retailers? I imagine in terms of how do you cope with this changing consumer behaviors, and what is it that you see as your role versus the retailer, for instance?
Yeah, no, thank you. Another good question. I would say the main change, at least in our categories for us from sales point of view, is the evolution of the channel footprint. So we were used to a certain type of channel to be more important, like the physical shop, the hypermarket, the supermarket, the discount, etc. And then suddenly other channel like e-commerce. And e-commerce is not only one channel, because within e-commerce, we got the brick and clicks, we got the pure digital pair, we got the e-pharmacy, et cetera, et cetera. The pharmacy itself, specialist store, et cetera. So it's a big change and evolution of the channel footprint. So it's really understand by country how much these changes will continue, will stay. And then working absolutely with the retailer in absolute cooperation, because we know that the physical retailer want to develop more and more their .com offer. They have to, because they have the pure players, we call that, not to mention company pure player, that they are gaining market share. So how we can really make sure that together we invest more on the online instead of the offline activation of their shops with the same customer. And how we can really look at the investment a bit more broadly, because in the past was typically marketing above the line, sales below the line. So it's only one pot now, because the retailer also started to sell data, sell marketing service. So how we can really look at investment in a more holistic way. So it's really thinking how we can develop for each retailer the right platform online, offline, and invest behind the right priorities.
Okay, thank you. Moving to the Q&A, I see two interesting questions coming in, and we still have a couple of minutes. Well, we need to have some time for closing as well. But Sandepan is raising a question for you, dear panel members. So what is the best way for large organizations to choose between all the changes which are coming our way and prioritize effectively, which is obviously, this is sort of the silver bullet question, right? So maybe, Caroline, could you share a thing on how do you choose and prioritize in this?
Yeah, and then let me bring it to myself, which I can influence, because I don't influence the priorities of P&G globally, unfortunately. One day, maybe, but not today. So today I'm working on the femcare business in the Benelux, and I'm sustainability leader for the Benelux. So my title already says where I want to put my priorities on sustainability, because I have a lot of passion on that. But how I would make my priorities on that change in consumer behavior is literally looking at my consumer and what are the priorities within my consumer and how, what are the biggest impact I can bring with her. So on femcare, we have been quite dramatically hit by the use of our products over 2020, which we didn't really anticipate. So when consumers stayed at home, they suddenly start using less femcare products, which is not a logical relationship in the beginning. But apparently when a consumer goes out, she thinks, I need to change now my product because I might have otherwise a leakage issue. And while she's in her home, she has much less of that stress and she thinks, well, I can stress it, I can leave it as it is. So that insight really came to us when we were doing interviews over the summer after the first wave. And that for me is the key priority in general, staying close to your consumer. Yes, we have all those digital tools, but still having the conversations, doing interviews, etc. Even if it's a couple of people, I think you get these ahas and then you know where to focus on in terms of your priorities. So that's, well, one thing was there. We need to make sure that our product stays relevant for her and to explain to her why she should change it, etc. The other thing, and that's more for my personal passion that I bring to my work, but in my life, is that that's sustainability that is there to stay. So what can I do to make sure that we can, with P&G locally, make an impact on that? And what can I do as a person to make an impact? Also to get fulfillment out of my own joy in life and out of my job. So those two things are... I would say the tips to the audience.
Well, thank you for the tips. Keep close to your customer and to yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, and maybe Valerie, how do you prioritize?
No, it's, I think, linked to also what Caroline just said. What's best for the... keeping our consumers in mind and customers in everything we do. But more and more also, what is, if you link it to the sustainability topic and really all the aspects of sustainability, what impact do we have with this? Really making sure we have that in the back of our mind with every decision we take. And it could be related to the well-being and welfare of our employees at this moment, but also to really what is the natural impact of the product that I'm now designing. And it's really prioritizing with everything we're doing with that, okay, what positive impact can I have linked to the sustainability agenda?
Okay, thank you. Filippo, adding some perspectives from your side on priority setting?
I agree what has been said. Maybe one way we could use, at least to think at priorities, and to review all our future plans through the digital lenses, because digital, we know that now, we like it or not, is going to become super important across all everything that we do. And I like someone said one day that companies are moving from digital denial to digital confusion to digital effectiveness. So we are still not there, at least in the not in digital effectiveness. So maybe reviewing everything through the digital lenses and understand for our supplier, for our customer, for our consumer, for our healthcare provider, are we doing the right thing, thinking and acting digital? Because the way the demand is going to be generated and fulfilled, more and more will be heavily influenced by digital and data. Maybe it's one way then to help us to prioritize.
Well, thank you very much. And maybe have some final question. Sorry, not to be answered all the Q&As considering time, but maybe just for you, just if you could share one word that you think you would like to stick talking about, well, I hate the term personally, new normal. It is a question of Marco. Should you just pick one thing you would like to stick in the new normal, between brackets, what would be your choice? And make it very brief, and then we come to a close. Caroline?
I was trying to think of one word to capture it. For me, it's that sustainability, personal impact. So I hope that everybody feels their responsibility on sustainability, and that's there to stay. So it's not one word, so I'm not sure how to.
It will do. Thank you. Valerie?
Yeah, related to what Carol, I was also in the same space, but it's what well, call it human connection or so, that it's really continue to look at things with the human aspect in the back of your mind. Again, not one word, but really making sure that's at the core of everything we do.
Yep. Thank you. And then finally, Filippo.
For me, if I have to choose one word, maybe it's caring. Caring in the sense that, you know, I really hope that after this terrible pandemic, we will all be more caring about our colleagues, caring about our teams, caring about the environment, caring about the planet, caring about the country. So maybe this idea of taking a bit more care of the people around us, and as a consequence also the planet, I hope that it will be something that will stay.
Well, thank you.
You nailed it, Filippo, with that word.
That was the word.
You're all looking for that word.
So, Caroline, Valerie, and Filippo, we'd like to thank you very much for coming into this entertaining discussion. So I would like to hand over to Valerie for a closing of this session for today.
Thank you, Patrick. And thank you for your time and energy today. Now, just two quick ones. One is, if you're not yet a member, please join the LEAD Network member platform. Well, you found this site, so you please make sure you enter your data as a member, and spread the word. I think that's also one thing which is really good. So let's stay connected. Let's also spread the word and really make sure we build this community and that we find each other. Also, even after at the end of the virtual world, which will never be fully ended, as we just concluded, but let's increase our platform. The second one, which is on the next slide, is there will be on the 6th and 7th of October, there will be again a virtual conference organized by LEAD with lots of very interesting webinar sessions, happy hours with the chapters, so the chapters in the different countries in Europe, but all around, let's say, interesting topics around diversity, inclusion, and related topics. So please save the date in your calendars already. There will be more also in the normal communications that are sent out by LEAD. And we will also update you again when we have the next events of the Dutch chapter. As I mentioned at the beginning, the 21st of May, there is the webinar on unconscious bias organized by the French/Dutch chapter combined. Hope to see you all there. If not, stay safe all. Thank you for joining us today, and hope to speak and we'll see you all very soon. Thank you.